They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. This is our life's work.
Good morning. It's 9:19, Wednesday, June 22nd. This is the TDN Writers Room presented by Keeneland. My name is Joe Bianca. I'm the associate editor of the Thoroughbred Daily News, and I got a bone to pick with Bill. You told me like a month ago that the Red Sox season was over. You still feel like that?
Joe, you should understand that as a Jets fan. We're not happy unless we're miserable. Come on.
True.
No, they've been on fire. Matter of fact, I spent Father's Day at Fenway Park with my beautiful daughter and had a great time up there. Spent an awful lot of money. Oh, boy, is this expensive. But anyways, hey, speaking of sports, a couple weeks ago, we were talking about the Rangers being knocked out. And I said on the show, I can only name one guy in the NHL. I came up with Sidney Crosby. Apologies to Eric Johnson. Horse owner, been on the show, and tonight but anyways, his Avalanche are up 2-1 in the Stanley Cup Finals, and good luck to Eric, and what a grave oversight on my part.
A friend of the show too, Bill. Eric Johnson,
yeah,
friend of the show.
Yeah.
Jonathan Green, general manager of DJ Stable, and Joe, I didn't realize till just now that today is June 22nd, which is actually my half birthday. So for those of you who want to send some half birthday wishes, I'm 52 and a half years old today, which is 630 months. And Bill, I think it's 2739 weeks. Do you know how many weeks old you are, Bill?
I don't have a clue, no.
It's got to be more than 2700, right?
Yes, slightly, I guess.
All right, like a fine wine? You're just aging with grace?
Whatever, I don't know.
It feels like we've been doing the show for 2,700 weeks.
Yeah, I know, right? At least this intro for 27 weeks.
Oh, man. I used to celebrate my half birthday when I was a little kid. Like, because that, right. You know, it felt like forever to get to the next birthday. Now they go by too quick. So I have no interest in celebrating a half birthday.
Yes. Joe, I am this many.
Oh, boy. Good boy, Joe.
Yeah, we got to wait. We got to wait another years off.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Make plans to attend the Keeneland September Yearling Sale beginning Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. All right, so it was a little bit of a slow week racing-wise here in America, but we did have the Royal Ascot meeting last week, and it was a lot of great action, a lot of great performances that I want to get to in a little bit. But you know, the big story in terms of stuff that we care about and stuff that we follow on a day-to-day basis in America was Irad Ortiz Jr. getting a little hot water with the BHA stewards for coming over on several horses Queen Mary. I get a lot of those two-year-old races confused. The Queen Mary, he was on Love Reigns for Stone Street and Wesley Ward, and he came over a little bit after the start and impeded a couple other horses, and he got suspended for 5 days right away. Now, similar to America, it's going to be a toothless suspension because he's suspended from June 29th through July 3rd, which obviously he's not going to be in Europe. He's not going to be in Great Britain riding there. So it's really not going to matter for him. But it was, I don't know, it was a little bit of a story because this is something that Irad has gotten in trouble for here in America. And I just got to say personally, I haven't seen a head-on. If anyone's got a head-on video of this race, please send it to me because all I saw was the pan. And it didn't look like that much to me, honestly. And especially in a big field like that with like 20-plus horses, the stuff that he's done in America, I think, is more dangerous. We remember the incident at Aqueduct last December when it was basically just him and one other horse, and he comes all the way over and cuts the horse off at the rail. This is a two-year-old race, a total scramble. To me, it didn't seem like that big of a deal, but what do you guys think?
Oh, well, Joe, first of all, I'm not sure it is going to be a toothless suspension because on, is it July 3rd? But whatever, in the midst of this, he's supposed to ride Life is Good in the John A. Nehru. Now, I'm sure, you know, they find these agents and lawyers, they find all sorts of loopholes, you know, where he'll wind up serving the suspension, you know, over Christmas when there's no racing anyways. But, you know, stay tuned on that. It's tough to really tell him there. The one thing, though, the stewards obviously over there, I like the way they act so quickly, whether you agree with the suspension or not. The suspension was out at the end of the day of racing. You're right. I haven't seen a head-on either. Without the head-on, it's a little bit hard to tell. But, you know, it's not a question of when Irad gets in trouble with this sort of thing. So, you know, if you say what was going to happen over there when Irad went over, well, he's going to win a lot of races and he's probably going to get in trouble with the stewards. He didn't win a lot of races. and he did get in trouble with the stewards. The horse was taken down to fourth, and maybe we'll just wait to get to this, but I think after we go through the roundtable here, but when you take into account what happened in the race with the Riddler, and that was the Queen Mary Stakes. Is that right? The Queen Mary Stakes on the Riddler? No, I read was the Riddler. This was in another race. But anyways, I want to get into that a little bit later to show kind of like the what I think was the inconsistency of the stewards.
Yeah, I think, you know, Bill, you're correct that A, I was happy to see that not only did the stewards act quickly, but also transparently. I mean, there was an announcement, you know, literally within 12 hours after the races were over, which is very swift justice as far as I'm concerned. That being said, you have to question whether or not this was like a residual effect on IRED about other infractions or questionable rides that he's given or aggressive rides that he's given over in the past. And it was just kind of one too many. And they said, you know what, enough's enough. We're going to go ahead and knock him on this one. You know, again, without seeing the head on, it's a little difficult to see what's going on. And I don't know if their process is the same as ours here, guys. You could help me out on this, which is, you know, where the jockeys would also have an opportunity to claim foul in the race, or if it's just the stewards and racing overlords over in Europe that make the final decision. But I don't remember even hearing about any kind of jockey or trainer inquiry on it or objection on the race. So to me, it the race itself, you know, individually was much to do about nothing. But if it's the, hey, all these other issues that kind of, you know, added up to death by 1,000 paper cuts, and now he's getting his comeuppance, I think that's really what it is. And Bill, you mentioned this before about the Riddler and how he won. And if you watch that race, he basically went 6 or 7 paths over, and which, you know, if you're in front by a lot, it's not a big deal, but he like played bumper car with like 3 horses behind him and didn't get taken down. And I don't know about the politics of the owner compared to the stewards and all those. I didn't get into any of that because there's too many people that I don't know. I don't know the cast of characters like we do here. But you have to wonder why, you know, IRAD's horse got DQ'd and the Riddler didn't. It's just very, very inconsistent. And I would love to have some kind of explanation from them, being that they were so transparent about, you know, what they saw or thought they saw with regard to IRAD's ride.
Yeah, well, like you guys are saying, it's refreshing to see somebody act so quickly, because in America we have to wait damn near a year to get some results from inquiries or from, you know, drug controversies. I didn't know that there was reciprocity between countries. So that's my ignorance. I didn't realize that the
There definitely is. Yeah.
Okay. I thought that was just an America thing between different American jurisdictions. So that makes sense. So then that in that case, that's going to be a little bit more of an impactful suspension for him if he is, like you said, going to ride, supposed to ride Life is Good. But yeah, they'll probably delay it and appeal it. And, you know, I don't know what the BHA's appeal process is. But yeah, Bill, you were going to talk about the Riddler ride as well.
Well, yeah, you know, and we want stewards to be consistent, and they took IRAD down in the Queen Mary. Now, this was the Norfolk Stakes, won by a big long shot called the Riddler, jockey Paul Hannigan aboard. And they did now, first of all, you're right, John. I mean, he came over and just sawed off 2 horses. I mean, it was as blatant an interference as you could ever see. And they did give the rider, Paul Hannigan, a suspension of 10 days. But what was different is they didn't take the horse down from the race. And, you know, I haven't seen a good explanation of why not. You know, and people were stunned. What are you talking about? He cut off these 2 horses so blatantly. But I just wonder, and is it this, again, this category 1 versus category 2 thing that is, you know, Pat Cummins, who I have all the respect for in the world, but he's the guy that's been beating the drum for this. And, you know, in our system, in the English system or the system in the rest of the world, unlike ours, if the stewards don't think the incident changed the placing or that the horse was bothered, wouldn't have finished ahead of the horse that bothered it, there's not a DQ. First of all, I think it did affect the outcome. I think the horse had finished second, probably would have won if not that. But again, if this is what's going to happen, if we ever get this great class 1 or category 1, I am not in favor of this at all. I mean, if, you know, there's a lot of reasons to talk about this, but what if you look, the 10-day suspension does hurt, but this is a big race with a huge purse. If you don't take the horse down, doesn't that give the jockeys a lot less incentive to behave out on the racetrack? Well, I can saw these 3 guys off, and I'm not going to get taken down in a group 1, a group 2, or whatever it is. I'm just going to go ahead and do it.
Yeah, I mean, it's that was my argument against it at the time when we were discussing it, was that, you know, what's to stop a jockey from just picking off horses that are retreating anyway, because you know that they're not going to take you down unless the stewards think that that horse would have placed above you or won the race. And there was actually some talk about, you know, what the appropriate punishment is for jockeys who endanger other riders. And it's there's some discussion of taking the purse money away. And that's something that we saw a little bit with the Jockey Club of Saudi Arabia, where they were taking a lot of the purse money away for interference or for, whip violations. And, you know, I think that's much more of a deterrent than a 5-day suspension that you can just kick down the road, or, you know, $1,000 fine or whatever it is in America. Typically it's very minuscule, especially when you're talking about multimillionaire jockeys like Irad Ortiz. But, you know, I think the system worked in terms of, you know, making a quick determination. But in terms of, you know, consistency, I didn't see, you know, I didn't see something that Irad did that was, you know, so much worse than the other case that you guys are bringing up. You know, unless you guys have more to say about this, I just wanted to mention a couple of American performances at Royal Ascot, because, you know, we're getting more and more American participation every year, which I think is a great thing. It gets more eyeballs on the races from this side of the pond. And, you know, I think any kind of international commingling of horses is good for the sport as a whole around the world. So we had, Golden Pal was a little bit of a disappointment. Actually, that was something that people were blaming Irad for, too, was that he broke slowly in that race. And they said that he was watching a horse who was misbehaving behind the gate, not realizing that the horse had been scratched. And then they opened the gates, and that's why Golden Pal was so slow out of the gate, and he had to rush up on the pace and ended up fading to last. You know, obviously Native Strip was probably not going to get beaten in that race anyway. The first Royal Ascot winner, I think, in 10 years for Australia since Black Caviar. So that was a big story. But in terms of the American horses, other than Golden Pal, we had a really nice run in the Coronation Stakes from Spenderella. She was second in that race. In Spiral was absolutely incredible, won by 4 3/4 lengths. But it was a really good run from Spenderella to hang on and dig in for a second there. Pizza Bianca did not run as well. So it seems like in the 3-year-old turf filly division, Spenderella is above her right now. And she's an interesting horse. Grand Motion, second time in 3 years. He's run second in the Coronation Stakes. He did it with Sharing 2 years ago after she had won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile Fillies Turf. She didn't quite go on when she came back to America. I think Spenderella has a little bit more upside. This was only her fourth career start. I believe all four of them were as a 3-year-old. So I think she has more upside and more forward to go. So I'm looking forward to seeing her get back on these shores. And then Campanelle, who dead-heated for third in the Platinum Jubilee Stakes on Saturday. I thought that was a pretty good run. I love having a rooting interest in these races, because it's fascinating, and it's appointment viewing. It's one of those rare meets over in Europe. I think the other one is maybe Longchamp in the fall, and then a little bit in the summer at the Curragh. But there's very few races in Europe right now that get my attention. This meet is great as it is, but with the increased American participation, I think it really is must-see TV, and NBC and Peacock do a great job of broadcasting as well. So it was a great weekend, a great week of racing overseas.
And I don't know if you guys heard as a sidebar story, but Paco Lopez announced that he's taking out a license in Europe. He's going to ride in England because the riding style and the rules are more, you know, fitting to the way he rides. That's a rumor I just heard, but you know, you guys are the great reporters. I'm sure you'll dig that one up.
Ba ba ba! Paco catching a stray from John Green. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Keeneland. Keeneland sales grads had several big wins over the weekend, including Keeneland's September grad Stolen Holiday. We captured the Grade 3 Eatontown Stakes at Monmouth. At that Monmouth card, it's a little bit of a preview for the Haskell Day card, which is coming up July 23rd. Also, Keeneland November grad missed the cut, who took the Golden Gate Stakes at Royal Ascot. And the latest edition from Chris McGrath's Keeneland Breeder Spotlight Series features Bill Betts, who's the breeder of champion Echo Zulu. The story, titled Latest to Show Best of Betts, talks about how Bill developed a unique business model for his farm centered around partnerships, and how he bases his mating plans off of finding the best match for each individual mare. Here's a quote from the story. Bill Betts says, "It's like running a sports franchise. These mares are draft choices. Some work out, some don't. I want to strengthen their weaknesses without weakening their strengths. But to do that, you have to see those strengths and weaknesses clearly. You can't be sentimental, and I think over the years, you develop intuition about it." I know John can relate to that. It's an inexact science, breeding horses and picking out mares, But when you get it right, there's a big possible payday and big potential.
No question about it. And you know, I have had a lot of dealings with Bill Betts over the years. We actually have about seven mares with him in partnership. And he doesn't say very much. He's a really smart guy. But when he does talk, you really have to take notice and listen. And you know, with his small group of broodmares, he's come up with some tremendous, tremendous horses, from the ones you mentioned, to Opportunity, to you know, to other homebreds that are grade one. If you ever walk in his office, he only has grade one pictures up on his wall, and it's an entire wall. I mean, it's really amazing. So, you know, I was really pleased to see that he was spotlighted, because Bill doesn't do very many interviews. And it was really great interview. And I think it showed the way that he does things. And it's more of a science than it is, you know, a guessing game for a guy like Bill. So kudos to him and his program.
For sure. And Chris does a great job. He's one of the best writers we have at the TDN. It's a really interesting spotlight series. And he does a good job of getting stuff out of people. He's a great interviewer. Gets great quotes out of people, like John said, that don't usually do interviews as well. So definitely check that out and check that series out. We'll be right back after this message from Keeneland.
They say the harder the work, the greater the reward. And this is hard work. It's the hours put in before dawn and after dark. It's the sacrifice, the sweat, the failure, and the faith. This is our industry. This is our life's work.
Maximum Security proves he's the real deal with a gate-to-wire win in the Florida Derby.
Champion three-year-old.
Maximum Security has won the TVG.com Haskell Invitational.
11 triple-digit buyers.
Maximum Security, he smoked them in the cigar mile.
Grade 1 winning four-year-old.
Maximum Security takes them all the way in the TVG Pacific Classic.
Secure your mare's future. Maximum Security.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Coolmore. Triple Crown winner Justify had his third winner on Friday with Clarkland Farm homebred Just Cindy, who won by 2 1/4 lengths at Churchill Downs. He also had his first stakes horse on Saturday when Tahoma, who we mentioned on the show, first out, ran second in the Facing Tipton Futurity at Santa Anita for Doug O'Neill. And Munnings added his 10th Haggard TDN Rising Star on Friday with Money's Gold, who went through an opening quarter in 22.41 and went on to win by over 14 lengths. The juvenile was trained by Todd Pletcher. It was a $300,000 yearling purchase for Robert and Luana Lowe. That's a two-year-old that might be worth a segment on her own in the future, because that was one of the most impressive two-year-old races you'll see this early in the year. Got a 101 buyer, which is basically unheard of for a June two-year-old. So definitely a horse worth watching. There was a story in earlier this week in the TDN about her, and it's definitely a horse to keep an eye on for this summer at Saratoga, because that's serious precocity to win by 14 lengths, stop the clock in like 56-2. So basically went home in 34 flat, basically around the turn. Like, those Munnings can really run, man. And she looks like the world is her oyster if she can stay healthy, because that was super, super impressive. All right, so we had a little bit more news on the Richard Baltus front. If you remember, this was a little bit mysterious about a month or so ago, that Santa Anita wasn't going to take his entries. There was like a late scratch of one of his horses, and there was a bunch of the rumor mill started spinning about what that meant and why he was being kind of soft suspended. And now we have more details based on a CHRB complaint, which was dated yesterday. Dan Ross reported on this in yesterday's TDN. Says between April 15th and May 8th this year, 23 horses trained by Richard Baltus were allegedly administered a substance on race day in violation of the CHRB's rules. The complaint states that surveillance video caught Baltus's employees allegedly administering the substance on the days they were entered to race. In California, trainers face tight restrictions about what medications and supplements can be given to a horse within 48 hours of a race. He's been ordered to appear at a hearing at Los Alamitos before the Board of Stewards on July 1st. Now, I don't know that. I mean, the two substances that supposedly were found were hygienamine and peyonal, which I don't know what either of those things are. I don't know how much of a performance enhancer they are. It says, according to USADA, hygienamine is a chemical found in a variety of plants. It can act as an anti-asthmatic to open up airways. And then the other drug, or the other substance, is a plant extract as well. So I don't really care about what these substances in particular do to horses. The fact that he was administering them on race day is the important thing, because like we were saying, like the article was saying, very tight restrictions on that. And it's just something that you can't do as a trainer, and something that, why would you even risk it? If you know that there's increased surveillance and there's this increased, you know, very rigid program in California that they've instituted in the last couple of years, why would you even take that chance that you're going to get busted for something like this? That says to me, now I don't have any proof of this, but that says to me that there's other stuff that he's been doing along the way that maybe have not been caught by the CHRB or the California stewards or anybody, because it does not seem to me like this would be the first time that he would take that chance. So what do you guys think?
Well, John, a couple of things. Excuse me, Joe, a couple of things here. I think you're right. I mean, I never heard of these drugs either. I kind of, you know, reading between the lines, it doesn't seem like they're real super potent performance enhancers. But again, that's not the point. You can't give it to the horses on the day of a race. And he wasn't just caught doing it once. He was caught 23 times. The other thing about this that jumped off the page to me is that, how was he caught? Surveillance cameras. And, you know, this is something we've mentioned before. Shouldn't there be a surveillance camera in every barn, in every racetrack in the United States of America? And then we're going to get into another thing where we're going to pat Sandine on the back in a minute was about their safety record. This is, again, the Stronach Group / Sandine / First Racing doing it right. They're putting these darn cameras in there. And if you're doing something, you're going to get caught. It does beg the question, what was he thinking? You know, you're doing this, you know, there's these cameras here. You know, why would you go ahead and do it? I think some, you know, maybe these guys just think that they're bulletproof because they've probably been doing these sort of things for years and never getting caught. But again, you know, I don't know how many surveillance cameras there are at the backstretch of Saratoga, the backstretch of Churchill Downs, the backstretch of Keeneland or whatnot. But my understanding is that at Santa Anita, they're in every single barn, and that's absolutely the way it should be. So good for Santa Anita. We'll see what happens to Richard Baltus down the road, because not only does he have the CHRB potential suspension, but he was also, and again, Santa Anita has been real careful about what they say, but it appears that they put a ban in on him as well. So if he gets a 45-day suspension or something like this, then the next question is, will Santa Anita let him back? You know, that's something we don't know yet.
And it's great for the industry that at least we have the ability to go ahead and police in this way. And if we have video cameras and surveillance cameras, then it's just one more piece of evidence to show against trainers with regard, and veterinarians for that matter, with regard to how they're handling horses on race day. And I know, and you guys know this as well from being on the backstretch, when a horse is entered, I mean, it's gotten to the point where, like, you can't get within 10 feet of the horse. I mean, there's a cone there, there's a stall sign that says, racing, do not disturb, you know, or in today, do not touch. I mean, and it's in three different languages. I mean, and basically you can't get near one of your horses on race day. And quite frankly, that's the way it should be, because these horses should be running on their own talents, not on what the chemical advances can be. Do the drugs that are allegedly, you know, in question here, do they really enhance? It doesn't matter how much they enhance. If they enhance a little bit and give somebody a little bit of an edge, you've seen how many races have been won or lost, you know, based on, you know, feet run, and based on, you know, maybe it opens up their bronchioles 1% more. Well, then that's an advantage that they have over a different horse. So it shouldn't be happening. And you guys mentioned also the timing of it. You just can't mess with these horses 24, 48 hours before they run. It's just against the rules, irrespective of what they gave the horse. So, you know, again, kudos to Santa Anita for really taking it, you know, seriously, because, again, a couple of years ago, guys, we were talking about how California racing may be extinct. I mean, it was getting to that point politically, and with some of these other, you know, strong groups like PETA that were coming in and banging at the gates, and correctly so, about how it was an unsafe industry. And Santa Anita in particular has done a really good job of safety measures, of changing the racetrack, of getting surveillance cameras, of really taking this seriously. And I really, you know, I as an owner appreciate the fact that the Stronach Group is doing this, and they're on the forefront of really making this, you know, a serious charge. So I don't know what's going to happen, you know, in the Court of Appeals with Baltus and his attorneys and everything like that. But it's got to make some of these trainers pause and at least think about what they're doing now. I mean, not change them for what they're doing, because, Bill, as you mentioned before, once somebody gets away with something, they think they're bulletproof and they can continue to get away with it over and over again. But it's nice to know that a couple of these racetracks are starting to implement some of these safety precautions and security cameras, and that should be the way it is all around, United States racing, because it's still, to this day, you can still, with a wave and a nod and maybe a donut and a coffee, get by the security at most of the racetrack, security groups at this point in time. If you look like you know what you're doing and they don't want to come out of their security shed, then you probably just can wave and go on your business and do whatever you want to any horse. I think it's great that we're implementing these things, and it doesn't matter why we're implementing it, because of political reasons or because of HISA or whatever the reason is. It's that we're doing it, and that now it's not a he said, she said kind of situation. We actually have hard facts to show and video surveillance to show that these guys are cheating.
Yeah. And like you said, you guys are saying the video surveillance is so huge because in general, you do not catch guys with testing, especially if they're ahead of the test in terms of what you can test for. So surveillance is huge, and there's no excuse not to have surveillance cameras at every major racetrack, every racetrack period in America. It's never been cheaper to buy like a Ring camera for your door like this. It's easy with technology these days to have surveillance. And that's the way you catch guys, because in general, as a general rule, I don't think guys are going to be injecting stuff or administering stuff to horses day of the race unless it's for something that they think is going to improve their performance. I don't think it's going to be a vitamin supplement. I don't think they're going to take that risk for something that's going to have no effect on how well the horse is going to run. So I think that's so huge. And like you guys are saying, Santa Anita is doing a great job, but it shouldn't just be on them. They shouldn't have to be the industry leader. And that's what we're kind of hoping for with HISA, to eventually come and wrap their arms around all of racing and all of the jurisdictions. And we talked to Lisa Lazarus, who's the CEO of HISA. We talked to her yesterday. That's this week's Green Group Guest of the Week. So stay tuned for that. And, obviously there's still a lot of questions to be answered in that regard, and how much power they're actually going to have and how well that's going to work out. But at least it's something that aims to get all of this under one umbrella so that it doesn't have to be on Santa Anita. But kudos to them. Kudos to Santa Anita and kudos to California Racing for being proactive and taking these steps, because it's working. And I say, sometimes on the show, one of the things I complain about is that one of the reasons that guys have been able to get away with stuff for so long is that they fill stalls, and racetrack officials generally would look the other way for guys who fill stalls and fill fields. And it's a little bit of a crisis in Santa Anita right now in terms of short fields. But sometimes you got to take that. Sometimes you got to eat that to do what's best for the horses. And, Richard Baltus has had 400 plus starters every year going back to 2016. In 2018, he had 534 starters. The year before that, he had 511. This is a guy who fills the entry box at Santa Anita and in California, but it shouldn't matter. You shouldn't get better. You shouldn't get preferential treatment just because you start a lot of horses. You should get the same rules that apply to you for a guy who has five horses and runs maybe 40, 50 starters in a year. It should all apply equally. And, I hats off to Santa Anita for saying, that's the most important thing, is to make sure that the guys aren't cheating their horses and aren't treating their horses in a way that we would not want to be broadcast to the public, because this stuff eventually gets out. This story in particular, probably not a big enough deal. Richard Baltus in particular, not a big enough deal to catch the attention of the general public. But if you let those things fester for long enough, eventually it's going to blow up into a huge story, and what goes on in the darkness eventually comes to light. So I'm happy to see that. Happy to see the surveillance system working. And I think that this is at least partially related. It came out after this past weekend when the Santa Anita meet wrapped up. Track officials at Santa Anita, I'm quoting a story from NBC Los Angeles here, which is great to see, period, these things getting reported, the good news getting reported. According to track officials and CHRB records, there were 3 racing fatalities at the track during the meet from among more than 4,800 starters. So that's one in every 1,600, which is obviously less than one per 1,000, which is what we're striving for right now, is to try to get that number below one. And Santa Anita has done that. And there were none. There were 0 musculoskeletal racing fatalities. that occurred on the main track at Santa Anita. And you look at the go back to a couple of years ago, there were 40 or 50 at that meet in 2019. It says park officials called the safety record a 62.5% improvement over the previous year and a 74% improvement since the spring of 2019, when a total of 42 horses died at the facility, obviously sparking that huge controversy and, you know, basically putting the entire racing industry, but especially in California, on life support and on the edge, teetering on the edge of extinction. And it took a lot of work. We've spoken about this on the show before, but it's worth bringing up over and over again. As long as these safety records continue to improve and continue to be sparkling like they are in Santa Anita right now, how much work it takes, not just from track officials, but from trainers and from vets and from jockeys and everybody on the grounds at Santa Anita that has to go along with these new protocols and has to kind of adjust their lives and their training regimens to really adapt and do what's best for the horse first and foremost. And then, you know, it seems like that's what's going on in California. And I wish that it were reported on CNN and, you know, Washington Post. And I wish this were on front pages all across the country. And, you know, unfortunately, it's not going to happen, because it only, if it bleeds, it leads kind of thing, where it's only, you know, bad news tends to get reported a lot more than high profile, you know, a lot more high profile than good news. But this is something that we should be talking about in racing, that people inside of racing should be championing, and there should be a public relations push to get people to know this, to say, look, we were in a really bad place, and there were a lot of horses were dying, unfortunately, and it was horrible. But here's what we've done to rectify the situation. And here's why racing should stick around, because people do care about their horses. You know, we're not an exploitative industry overall. Yes, there are some people who don't do right, and we're trying to weed those people out. But for the rest of us, we care about the horses. And, you know, this game is everything, and these animals are everything to us. And that's, you know, that's exactly what these numbers say, is that there is now a concentrated effort to put the horses first and to show everybody that there's no game without the horses and the horses' safety. The TDN Riders Room is brought to you by Lane's End. This week's Lane's End Stallion of the Week is Catalina Cruiser. The son of Union Rags has his first yearlings going through the ring this year. He has 6 entered in the upcoming Facing Tipton July sale. You can read more about Catalina Cruiser's first crop in our first crop yearling preview series on YouTube or on TDN TV. The multiple graded stakes winner stands at Lane's End this year for $15,000. Go check him out. Super fast sprinter miler that I think has a really good female pedigree as well. And I think is pretty good value at that price. So go check him out and check out the rest of the star-studded Lane's End Stallion roster. We'll be right back after this message from Lane's End.
Catalina Cruiser. He won 7 of 9 starts coast to coast with 6 triple digit buyers and 5 dominating graded stakes wins, including a record in the Grade 2 True North Stakes. A son of leading fifth crop sire, Union Rags. A $370,000 yearling with an imposing physical and one of the best of his generation. There's only one Catalina Cruiser, now standing at Lane's End.
With some of the fullest fields in the country and quality racing year-round, there's never been a better time to reap the rewards of breeding and racing in Kentucky. Purse money in Kentucky is at an all-time high, as is average purse per race, outpacing California, Florida, and New York. Kentucky breds. Breed them. Raise them. Race them. We all win.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by the Kentucky Thoroughbred Owners and Breeders. Kentucky Breds dominated Belmont Stakes Day 2 weekends ago, as we expected, winning 8 of the 9 greatest stakes races. Mo Donegal's win in the Belmont Stakes marked a complete sweep of this year's Triple Crown races for Kentucky Breds. And Kentucky Breds will compete in the richest maiden races in the world during this year's Kentucky Downs race meet, which is spread over the first 2 weeks of September. Cannot wait for that. Maiden races will go for a record $150,000, including a purse supplement of $70,000 from the Kentucky Thoroughbred Development Fund. The meet will also feature 17 stakes races and 8 graded races. That meet gets better every year. And you know, you can run maidens for more than you'll get in most purse stakes across the country. So definitely go check that out, especially if you got a Kentucky bred. So this week we talked to Lisa Lazarus, who is the Heise CEO. She's been doing a pretty good job, and I think Heise's been doing a pretty good job overall answering people's questions. Obviously, this is kind of a scramble here to get everybody ready for the July 1st implementation date. We still have 6 months to January 1st after that for the drug enforcement program. So we asked her a bunch of questions. We had a little bit of technical difficulties where we couldn't hear some of what she was saying. So we didn't get to ask the follow-ups, all the follow-ups that we quite wanted to, but you'll be able to hear and see everything. And the quality is perfect in that regard. So it was a good conversation. And then I think we're going to try to have her on maybe a couple of months into Heise after July 1st to just kind of follow up and see where things are at and see, you know, if we got everybody registered and whether or not there are any issues. So check out our interview with Lisa Lazarus. The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. With over 500 clients in the horse business, they have proven strategies to save you taxes. Learn more about how they can help you at www.greenco.com. So we're thrilled and honored this week to bring on the CEO of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Authority, which is the governing body of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. Lisa Lazarus, thank you so much for coming on.
I'm very happy to be here, and thank you for inviting me.
Yeah, no, we're super excited to have you. And I think you guys have done a good job answering questions so far as we creep towards that July 1st implementation date. And we have a lot more questions for you. But before that, let's just do a little brief background on your history and how you came to be involved in racing.
Sure. So I'm a lawyer by training. I spent really the first 10 years of my career actually following being at a law firm at the National Football League, representing teams and management on some of the similar, you know, same issues that I'm actually addressing now in horse racing, such as their anti-doping program, although it was obviously a human program. Following that, I was general counsel of the International Equestrian Federation, where I completely revamped, launched, and ran an equine anti-doping program for 133 national federations from different countries, and sport horses, obviously. Following that, I started an equine law practice where I represented primarily horsemen in the horse sport world. And then I was delighted to get the opportunity to lead Heise as its first CEO, first permanent CEO. And I guess that's where we are now.
Well, great. Thank you, Lisa. And thanks for joining us. And we're now, what is it? So 9-10 days away from the implementation on July 1st. I guess the big push now is to get as many people, get people and the horses registered. Kind of a two-part question. How is that going? And come July 1st, is there a possibility that if people are not registered, their horse is not registered, we may see some horses have to be scratched, or is there going to be a grace period?
So the first question I'll answer is, from my metrics, I feel like it's going quite well now. We have about 26,000 persons plus horses registered. And the sort of trajectory of registrations is on a very steep incline. So we're seeing, you know, more registrations sort of every day, obviously, as we get closer to the deadline. We're doing everything possible in order to answer people's questions and try to make sure people know how to get registered. We're making sure that people have the tools to get registered. What we're going to roll out, and I'm actually going to be announcing it now for the first time on your show here, is we've heard some concerns from people that, you know, if they register, they're giving up a lot of rights. They don't know what the anti-drug medication control program is going to look like. So we're going to be rolling out a feature that allows people to unregister very easily at any time should they ultimately change their minds. So they don't have this. I mean, well, you know, my view is that once we get going on July 1, everyone's going to realize this program is actually supportive, that it's not going to be punitive, that we're really going to kind of do our best. And then the other thing to answer your question on will horses be scratched? The way the system is set up is that racing offices can take entries of unregistered persons and unregistered horses. What's going to happen is that the racing office will be notified when they do that those persons are not registered. And then we sort of built in a warning system. Well, they'll then be notified and said, you know, you got 2-3 days before the race itself, you know, please go ahead and register. If we get to July 2nd, and because we will also give July 1 as a registration day as well, since that's the effective date, if we get to July 2nd, we don't have a responsible person, which is usually the trainer, one designated owner, and the horse registered, then we will be forced to scratch. But what I'm really hoping, as I said, that we don't get to that and that we're able to basically answer everyone's questions and get everyone registered.
Gotcha. You mentioned the Drug Enforcement Partnership. I think, you know, a big part of the initial bill being passed and what everyone got excited about was getting USADA on board because they brought instant credibility with their drug enforcement history. Obviously, that fell through and we're still working through that. We have 6 months beyond the effective date of HISA before the drug enforcement program is scheduled to go into effect. So where are we with that? I know you guys are talking to new partners. And how close is that to getting up and running?
So that's very close to getting up and running. In May, early May, we appointed the Center for Drug-Free Sport to be the enforcement agency, and they've created an entity called the Horse Racing Integrity and Welfare Unit. And that unit has essentially like five pillars. It has the testing pillar, the lab accreditation pillar, education, science, and also prosecutions. And investigations as well. So we're basically working on equipping all of those pillars to be ready to go on January 1. We've have some top people and experts in their field involved. And we've also have, and this is important, I think, for your listeners, that the anti-doping and medication control rules are actually posted on our website now for public comment. So if anybody wants to have their say or wants to be heard on any particular issue, please make sure to comment before the end of the month.
Lisa, on the same question of the drug testing USADA, and this is a personal feeling, I was very disappointed when USADA dropped out because I felt that they were the kind of a gold standard when it comes to this. And I think that racing has learned through the indictments of Service Navarro and the rest that drug testing alone is just not good enough, that there's too many ways you can evade the test and people don't get caught. So reassure me, what can Drug Free Sports International do above and beyond standard drug testing? And, you know, are we going, when come January 1, are we going to catch the bad guys? I'll put it as simple as that.
Yeah, so I actually feel really comfortable that the alternative that we selected is going to be as effective or more than what we were initially discussing. And that's because we put a lot of investment into the investigation component. We have one of the sort of top people internationally from the World Anti-Doping Agency on our advisory council. And we also are in the process of staffing up with some really, I think you'll be very impressed by the people that are going to be actually running that. So the testing is one component, but it's only one component. It has to work in conjunction with investigations and with lab accreditation and prosecutions. So all of those areas need to be strong. And, you know, I'm really confident that you're going to, that the industry is going to see that we have that in place come January 1.
All right. So then the other question is, since we still have a little bit of time before the drug enforcement program is set to take form and kick in, what are the main benefits now from July 1st to January 1st? Like, I'm all for unification in racing just in general, but just what are some of the specific reforms that were you're going to implement starting July 1st that people need to get behind?
So first of all, you're going to see a uniform crop rule, which we haven't had in place before. So every racing jurisdiction will be essentially limited to the same, governed by the exact same rule around the crop, how many strikes, the way the strikes can actually be administered, et cetera. I think that's going to be an important change because it's very hard for people to follow state to state. There are also obviously sort of welfare and concerns that we believe are associated with crop use. You're also going to see enhanced health and safety requirements and oversight for jockeys, which I think is a population that has traditionally been underserved. You're going to see enhanced veterinary reporting and enhanced veterinary inspections, which we think are a key to reducing equine fatalities and equine breakdowns. And you're going to see something called the voided claim rule across the country, which also we think is going to contribute towards equine welfare and also a level playing field.
Gotcha. Lisa, where do we stand in Texas right now? And obviously there's some controversy there with the Texas Racing Commission saying that as of July 1, they're not going to be simulcasting the races anymore. Is there an 11th hour solution to this problem? And if not, you know, kind of what does that mean for the bigger picture?
Sure. So, you know, as you may know, and you might have read, I went down to Texas and I met with the Texas Racing Commission and with their executive director, Amy Cook, as did my general counsel, John Roach. We tried really hard to find a solution. Ultimately, you know, Texas's view is that given the way that their Texas Racing Commission regulations are written, are structured, they don't have the authority to allow another regulator to come in and regulate any portion of horse racing. Obviously, we believe that's not consistent with the federal law and essentially what Congress ordered. in Texas right now, the only racetrack running is Lone Star, and they only run until July 23rd. So ultimately, it's really sort of 22 days of racing that's at issue, and I had really hoped that we could reach a resolution. However, what I believe is going to happen, and what I'm hopeful will happen, is that we then have from the end of July to January 1 to try to find a way forward with Texas. And what Texas essentially did was they in my view, acknowledged the impact of the federal law by essentially taking themselves out of federal authority or out of HISA's authority by ordering their racetracks not to export their signal for parimutuel wagering, which is ultimately you know, the remedy that the Act provides us with in order to enforce our regulations against the racetracks.
Gotcha. So my question is, because there are states that have opted out, and you know, there's still questions about the cost structure of the bill and how it's going to be implemented. How does that affect the way you guys will end up deciding the cost structure when states do opt out, like when Texas? Because I assume you guys were banking on having the fees come in from that state or this state. So how does that affect the way the cost structure is going to be distributed?
So I think there's a bit of confusion about what the impact of the opt-ins are. So if the state opts in financially, all that means that the Racing Commission gets to decide how the fees are collected. But if the Racing Commission doesn't opt in financially, the responsibility for collecting fees goes to the racetracks in that state under a certain cost model. And then they have to negotiate with all the covered persons to come up with an allocation. So at this stage, essentially almost, I think maybe one or two racetracks, we don't have their split yet, but we have the cost resolutions or agreements from every racetrack in this country. And so that falls under our authority, I should say. That is a thoroughbred horse race that exports their signal for simulcast. And so it just changes. It only changes where the fees come from, not whether or not we get the fees. With the caveat that if Texas is not under our authority, the Texas, what we would have otherwise collected from Texas, will have to be redistributed to other racetracks or other states.
Lisa, yesterday you were meeting via Zoom with horsemen in Kentucky, and there was a lot of talk about there's too many moving parts here. It's not all coming together. Why don't we just delay this? What would be the problem to that? And what was your answer to them about that?
So first of all, I met in person. So I was actually there at Churchill Downs in there, you know, meeting with the horsemen. The second thing is what I've essentially said is we've delayed implementation and enforcement of those areas we can control. But Congress and the FTC does not want this delayed. That's who we report to. And I don't have the authority to actually delay the bill itself or the act itself. What we are trying to do is phase in a lot of the elements and not make enforcement, you know, overwhelmingly harsh or difficult for horsemen to adjust come July 1.
All right. Last question for me. Like you said, I think you guys have done a good job going on listening tours and talking to people. What are some of like the reasonable concerns from horsemen that you've heard, and how have you guys adjusted or maybe kind of explained things to assuage those concerns?
So, you know, horsemen are really the heart of the sport. And so it's really important that we listen to them and we hear their feedback. And we have made adjustments for them. We've made adjustments to the enforcement of the crop specifications and the horseshoes to allow time for a horseman to be able to adapt. We've made modifications to some of the restrictions on treatments like pin firing. There was a lot of concern about that. And we made it clear that it's only prohibited on the shins. We've also delayed, you know, implementation where we can allow people to adjust. So, and we're constantly asking horsemen for feedback. We obviously can't respond to everything, but we are trying to be responsive to those legitimate concerns.
All right, cool. Lisa, thank you so much for coming on. We'd love to have you back on maybe a couple months into the act just to assess how things are going and the progress. But we really appreciate you making the time.
Thank you for having me. And thank you for having me. And I'll apologize for the hotel Wi-Fi.
The Green Group Guest of the Week is sponsored by The Green Group, an accounting, tax, consulting, and advisory firm specializing in the thoroughbred industry. As this week's Green Group Guest of the Week, Lisa Lazarus will receive a free one-hour tax consultation. Learn more at greenco.com. We'll be right back after this message from The Green Group.
Why do the most successful owners, breeders, and horsemen select the Green Group as their tax advisor? We simply save them money and know how to make them more successful. Over the past 40 years, founder Leonard Green has owned and bred some of the best racehorses in the history of the sport. His in-depth, hands-on industry knowledge, combined with cutting-edge tax-saving strategies, has produced positive results for his clientele and has made the Green Group the top-rated accounting and tax firm in the business. For a confidential and complimentary consultation, contact us at 732-634-5100 or visit our website at www.greenco.com. The Green Group, proven strategies to save you taxes.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by XBTV. This week's XBTV Workout of the Week features dual grade one winner, Country Grammar. Obviously, we saw him last winning the Dubai World Cup in March. This was his first work back at Santa Anita after he spent some time home at the Windstar Training Center following the Dubai World Cup win. You can see it on the screen right now if you're watching the video version of this podcast, which you always should do. The five-year-old worked 4 furlongs on Saturday in 49-3. Definitely one of the top contenders in the handicap division. So we're looking forward to seeing him probably in the Pacific Classic, maybe the Whitney. So especially on the West Coast, I think he's going to take some beating. Unless Flightline wants to go a mile and a quarter, then I think everybody's running for a second behind Flightline. But Country Grabber certainly has the resume to be one of the top contenders in the handicap division the rest of this year, this summer and fall. So check out that workout on XBTV. And like I said, Saratoga right around the corner. We're less than a month away. So you want to see all those babies working out, go check out XBTV.com. Just type in the search bar, whatever horse you're looking for, most likely going to have it as that Oklahoma training track activity starts to really ramp up. So this is very, very exciting to announce that this week, this Saturday, we are going to finally see our girl, our namesake, Writers Room, make her career debut at Belmont Park in a New York bred turf sprint maiden special weight from Linda Rice's barn. And we just, you know, it feels like your daughter or your son taking their first steps. You know, they've been crawling and crawling and crawling, and now they're starting to become more of a person right before your eyes. And you know, we've been super excited about her for a while. And we love John and everybody at DJ Stable for naming her Writers Room. And it's just gonna be exciting, you know. John can tell you whether or not she can run. You know, we can't run either. So even if she doesn't, we'll love her all the same. But no matter what, it's going to be cool to see her name in the entries and hear the announcer call her name. So, yeah, you guys got to be excited as well.
We're very excited. And, you know, the bar is set pretty high because, you know, when Stanard Goodside went out and won first time out, all of a sudden, like all these namesakes from that derived from the writer's room. Show, you know, it got stepped up a lot. So that's why we kind of gave this filly a little bit more time. I know Linda wanted to breeze her a couple more times to make sure that she was really good and tight for this race. With baby races, I mean, she's a three-year-old, but with maidens, you never know. You just never know what's going to happen. I do know that she's faster than the three of us. So if we were in a four-person race, she would still win that race, which is good. But, you know, she's bred to like both the turf and the dirt. So I think even if it rains and comes off, we're probably still going to run in the slop as well. But it's exciting to see her, you know, getting ready to run. And like you mentioned, to see her name in the program and the racing form is going to be really super excited. I'm not going to be out there on Saturday, but certainly if you want to go out and root her on, and if you use the code word writer's room, then we'll let you in the winner's circle. Just make sure you say it to Linda really loud and proud, writer's room, the show.
Yeah, for sure. And we actually we're probably showing it right now, but shout out to Sue and Patty who were at Belmont yesterday shooting a lot of footage of her and some photos of her. She's on page 2 in the TDN in today's edition. So yeah, it's really exciting and it's really a cool couple of weeks because first we're parodied and caricatured in the Remy cartoon, and now we got a horse. It was right behind John. I gotta get my frame. Shout out to Remy for sending the print. I got that last week, so can't wait to put that up on my wall. But yeah, well, you know, my head can't get much bigger, but you know, it's definitely a concern with the things that have been going on the last few weeks for this show. But it's always exciting, and yeah, cannot wait to see her run, and we'll be rooting her on for sure.
And just as an update, because I know Skip, you know, super fan Skip was asking me, Stanard Goodside was shipped to Churchill Downs, breezed on that racetrack, and is still on course to run in the Bashful Manor July 4th weekend. Yeah. So we're super excited about that. And depending on how he and Writers Room run, you know, in the next couple of weeks, there could be another naming contest in the mix.
Lane's End, you hear that? The last one, you got a lot out of that naming contest week after week after week. somebody else wants to outbid Lance and do a naming contest. No, that was so much fun. And it's, you know, stay on our good side, looking like a little bit of a monster. Yeah, why not? Why not send in some names and see if we can get another one?
And John, 3 or 4 years from now, you'll have to breed Writers Room to stay on our good side, right?
You know, if only that would happen, Bill, and maybe he'll stand at Lane's End with his father and grandfather. I mean, that would really be good. But just if we do another naming contest, can we just make sure that everyone understands that you can't just beat up on Bill? You can't just name horses like Bill's a curmudgeon or Bill's ass or, you know, like, or the Red Sox suck, because those names have already been taken, actually. So we need to come up with some really good names about like what Skip did with his 30 entries. I would say 29 of Skip's 30 entries were really solid and right on the mark, you know, with regard to the breeding. So if we do it again, if we get a sponsor for this, and we do it again, then it'll be extra juice for the show. And it's just so much fun to have a horse named after the show. And like you said, Joe, it does inflate our egos that much more, but we deserve it.
Totally. That's a little lesser known secret that every time John misses an interview, it's because he pulled a muscle from patting himself on the back a little bit too much, like Barry Horowitz. But yeah, Saturday, Writers Room, set an alarm. We don't know which race it's going to be yet. The entries are going to come out later today. But yeah, we'll all be watching and rooting our girl on. The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by West Point Thoroughbreds. Joining a West Point Thoroughbreds partnership can vault you into the world of instant camaraderie among people surrounding high-class horses and stakes action for a fraction of the cost. You're trying to do it on your own. You can learn more at westpointtb.com. Stone Silent, who's owned by West Point in partnership with Tala Racing and Edwin Barker, went on debut in the Facing Tippin Debutante Stakes at Santa Anita on Saturday. The juvenile filly could be the next star for John Sadler, who's obviously a big star, superstar Flightline, now back in training at Santa Anita, so can't wait to see him run again. And also, as John mentioned, Brigadier General is going to be running on Saturday in the Ohio Derby, the Grade 3 Ohio Derby at Thistledown. So best of luck to all the West Point partners with him and with that really exciting 2-year-old filly. We'll be right back to this message from West Point Thoroughbreds.
All the thrills, fraction of the bills, experience the power of the partnership, change your life, make new friends, and compete at the highest level of thoroughbred racing. West Point Thoroughbreds, the gold standard in racing partnerships. Visit westpointtb.com.
Being a small family business, I guess we're part of a dying breed. We're really grateful for the people that entrust us. We know it's a huge responsibility.
We're always with your horse every step of the way. When it comes to being at the sales ground, showing your horses, we are with your horse.
Just driving them down the road every day, there's not a time that I don't look out and feel a responsibility to the sport, the animal, the people that come to invest in the game. I want to see as many people enjoy this sport as they possibly can, because we do have the most beautiful sport in the world.
The TDN Writers Room is brought to you by Legacy Bloodstock. If you think that 50 years combined experience in the horse business can benefit your program, give Tommy or Wendy a call. They personally advise on each horse as if they were their own. After another highly productive weekend, Legacy now has 100 winners of 129 races this year. Legacy grads have also earned nearly $4 million in purses already in 2022, which is a big number. They'll kick off their yearling sale season next month at the Facing Tipton July sale. And I know John was looking at a horse of theirs in the catalog.
Yeah, I got their catalog a couple of days ago and was leafing through it. And I saw that Legacy Bloodstock has one horse in the sale, which usually leads me to believe that he must be a superstar, because you don't just bring one horse to a sale unless you really feel like that he's going to knock out of the park. It's a Practical Joke colt out of a Malibu Moon mare from Devil His Due's family. So Devil His Due, multiple grade one winner, made almost $4 million on the racetrack. And this colt is closely bred to the Devil His Due. Practical Joke has had a pretty good first year, you know, with Wit and Girl With A Dream and many other graded and black type winners. So I'm going to be curious. I'm actually going to be there at the sale. I'm going to be curious to see hit 276 at Legacy Bloodstock, a Practical Joke colt that they'll be selling in a one horse consignment. So I'm really anxious to see how this colt looks.
Really, got some great sponsor crossover here. Practical Joke at Coolmore, and then Legacy with the horse at Facing Tipton. And then John Green and DJ Stable and the Green Group milling around the Facing Tipton July sales crowd. So best of luck to everybody, to Tommy and Wendy and everybody at Legacy with the yearling sales season. I know it's going to start getting busy for you guys real soon. So good luck to y'all. This week's Remy cartoon, very, very fitting for this week's show. We had Lisa Lazarus on, the CEO of Heise. And it's everybody. It's the horses, the jocks, the breeders, the horsemen, all strapped in on the rocket ship. And the Heise general looking in and saying, we're pretty sure we're a go for a launch. That's kind of where we're at right now. We're all going to be flying by the seat of our pants a little bit. I do think we have a lot of smart people that are involved and are trying to get everything unified. But it's going to, you know, there's going to be challenges and there's going to be some back and forth in the early days of this. But I think the main thing is that everybody gets registered and you know, we'll go from there. So shout out to Remy, because that was perfect. Perfect cartoon for this week's show. As we look forward, we're now, how many days? We're 9 days away from the implementation of the Horse Racing Integrity and Safety Act. It feels like a million years ago that it was passed, and you know, we'll see how it goes. All right, so that's going to do it for this week's edition of the TDN Writers Room, presented by Keeneland. A reminder that the Keeneland September sale begins Monday, September 12th. You can learn more at theworldsyearlingsale.com. I want to thank Bill Finley, John Green, our Green Group guest of the week, Lisa Lazarus, our producer, Patty Wolf, our associate producer, Katie Petruniak, and our editors, Anthony LaRocca, Aaliyah LaRocca, and Nathan Wilkinson. Thank you so much for watching. We'll see you next week, and go Writers Room!